So they came up these stairs, and I did what I was told, and I scooched under the eaves and pulled the hay over me, and I made myself very, very small and very quiet. I wasn't even breathing. And they started poking the bayonets in the hay to make sure there was nobody there. And all three of them were poking the hay with the bayonets, and one of the bayonets landed about an inch from my face and got stuck in the wood. And I remember as he pulled it out, I remember the twang it made. And I think I grew up that day. I think I realized what it meant to die. Basically, it means that somebody's going to stick a bayonet in you. So that's what dying means, and that's what these people were trying to do to me. So then I started being afraid of death because I thought, uh-oh, that must hurt. Because it hurt the wood, it must have hurt the person much more. Then my mother was arrested because somebody realized that I wasn't in the ghetto. And they tortured her. And she never told me what they did to her because she said it was far too humiliating. She wouldn't let me know about it. And she managed to smuggle my father out of the ghetto. She wanted him to escape to Romania, because they weren't rounding up the people yet in Romania, and she thought that she could save him, and she bribed some people with some gold Napoleon coins and told him that he had to leave. And he said, listen, before I go, I've got to go and see the kid because I don't want her to feel that I'm abandoning her. It might be years before I see her. I want her to know that I'm coming back, that I'm her daddy and that I love her and that I'm not leaving her. So I have to go and say goodbye to her. And he was on the road to this village walking at night when they caught him. And they deported him the next day to Auschwitz, and I never saw him again. And you know, to this day, I have tremendous guilt about this because I feel that perhaps if he hadn't loved me so much, he wouldn't have come. I mean, I obviously, you know, it's stupid, but, you know, guilt is like love. It comes unbidden. You don't have a choice about these feelings that come to you. And I remember at that point, I was very happy because the war broke out. You wouldn't believe how happy we were when the war came, because the Russians are coming and the Germans are leaving and the Hungarians are giving up and nobody's going to kill us anymore and it's going to be wonderful. And my mother came and got me and took me home, and this was wonderful. And the bombs were falling, and it was very exciting because when you're a kid, you don't expect the bomb to be for you. It's a bit more abstract. There was only one problem. We had nothing to eat, literally nothing to eat. There were some potatoes in the basement, and you have no idea how many ways you can cook a potato. I still like potatoes, though. The bombs were falling, and there was some sort of a casino nearby, and it took a direct hit, and there were playing cards raining down all over the street. I still remember that, and I was scared, but I wasn't scared. At the same time, I was quite excited because things were happening and I was with my mother. And we were cold and we had no food. And I remember looking out the window. After a while, we stopped even going down to the shelter because, I mean, the bombs were just falling all over the place. And I was looking out the window and there was a horse and a cart with somebody's pathetic belongings on it. And the horse dropped dead in front of our house. And it was quite cold, and I remember within minutes, doors opened and people ran out with dishes and knives and they started skinning this horse. And as they pulled off the skin, I remember it was steaming. And within minutes, that horse was pretty much stripped. And even the bones were taken for soup, and there was nothing left of that horse. And everybody was eating that horse. The whole street was eating horse meat, horse and potatoes. And you know, when you're hungry, you eat anything. And the war was going on. There was a frozen river opposite our house, and the Russians were coming across the frozen river, linking arms and singing. And they were singing and singing and coming up the bank, and they were being machine gunned. And another load came and singing. They came up the bank. They were shot again. They must have been drunk because nobody's that brave. And they were coming and coming until the corpses built up to a huge sort of berm. And the last lot that came over the top were not shot because people had run out of bullets and we were under Russian occupation. Now, that in itself was not fun, but, you know, they didn't persecute children. They didn't hurt me. They were raping the women, and my mother made a false wall in our bathroom, and all the women from the area lived in that little hidey hole. And everybody was scared, and the women were hiding from the rapists, and there was a lot of shooting and screaming and yelling. At that point, my mother decided to do something about it. So she put some white flour in her hair, or chalk, whatever it was, put a scarf on her head, put a big pillow on her back, pretending to be a hunchback, wore some rags, and painted some black on her face. She blacked out her teeth, and she pretended to be an old hag, and found somebody to translate for her, and went to see the commander of the town. She said something had to be done, so she was going to fix it. So she went to see the commander. To her surprise, it was a woman, a young woman, because by this time the Russians had lost so many people that young people and young men and women were taking very important roles. And my mother said to this woman through the interpreter, "Come to my house. I'm a very good dressmaker and I can make you look beautiful. I mean, you shouldn't be looking like that. Your hair is all wrong. Come and I'll make you pretty." And she came, and my mother fixed her hair, and she yanked one of the drapes off the window and draped it around this woman and made her a pretty dress. And this woman was delighted. And then other Russian ladies came, and we had food. We had so much food. We had ham and butter and cheese. And all the women behind the false wall were busy unpicking cloth because there was no cloth to be had. So they were unpicking old dresses to make enough cloth for my mother to make dresses for all these Russian women. And we even got a guard outside our house, and nobody was being raped, and it was really quite fun. And then the Russian commander decided to give us our own special guard. And Ivan came. Ivan was about, I would say, 17. He was a captain. By this time, they'd been promoted again because there were so many losses. And he was a very pretty boy, and he had a sidekick, an old man who was playing the accordion. And Ivan and his sidekick were constantly drunk. I mean, they drank and drank and drank. They drank cologne, they drank meth, they drank anything they could get their hands on. But I wasn't afraid of him because he was very nice to me, and he was always singing, and I was dancing, and I loved Ivan. And, you know, one day Ivan brought us a goose liver, which was a big delicacy. And they took this goose liver, and it had a bit of blood on it, so he decided to wash it in the toilet because he'd never had a toilet where he came from. He stuck it in the toilet and pulled a chain, and the goose liver went away, and he shot the toilet. That was the kind of person he was. They would take pot shots at the moldings in the ceiling, and they would shoot at things, and when we ran out of fuel, they would break up the antique furniture and burn it. And all this time, they were singing and playing with me, and we had such fun, Ivan and I. And Ivan told me that when I was 17, he would come back for me and marry me. Well, God knows what happened to the poor man. And I remember, you know, I was sick, and he brought me an orange. You have no idea what an orange means to a child who'd been hungry. He brought me this orange, and it was wrapped in this crinkly white paper, and I remember opening the paper and seeing this orange. It was like the sun rising out of the night. It was amazing. And the smell of it, and the, oh, it was amazing. And then my mother gave me pieces of it to eat, and then she candied the peels. And I was only allowed to eat orange when I was sick, and I wanted to be sick all the time so I could have more orange peels. And that orange meant more to me than anything. I still marvel every time I see an orange.